It's so good to be back here tonight and to see so many here for worship. This reminds me a lot of home. I preach east of Dallas in Lyndale, and we have about the same size membership as here, probably had similar numbers of people in the morning, and then in the evening, a good crowd gathered there and here as well. And so as I look out at this good crowd that's come back, I kind of know what I'm looking at. I mean, you're here on purpose tonight. If you're here at 5 p.m. while there's some football game going on, then you're here because you love God. You enjoy worshiping God. You want to be with the people of God. And that means a great deal to everyone around you, and it means a great deal to me. I'm encouraged already today, the kindness of this group. And we have some who've come from other places, some who've driven up from Tennessee, Alabama, some folks I know actually from Texas that are here tonight. It's just a beautiful fellowship we share in Christ. There is nothing like it in the world. And there will be nothing like it after this world is gone. It's so amazing that we get to participate in that. So we're thankful to all who are here and together. Now, a little bit about what we're going to do tonight. We're going to continue and kind of wrap up some of the main ideas on the missions of mercy. I hope that if you're here this evening, it's not just I love worshiping God, but it's also I want to be mission-oriented. I want to be an evangelist. I want to bring people to Jesus. I want to strengthen the weak. Maybe I haven't gone afar up on a mountain recently to restore some wanderer, but I want to learn how to restore a wanderer. I really hope that's what you're thinking tonight, because that's kind of the idea. Very practical ideas and concepts about how to be more evangelistic as an individual and also as an entire church culture. Wouldn't it be awesome if every time somebody mentioned the church where you worshiped, they said, those are soul seekers. They're always looking to teach and help and assist and draw in. And that's what we want to be the case. Tonight, it's kind of like, what are those roles? What has God gifted you to do as a role among God's people to help bring people to Christ? So I'm going to identify a few different roles for you in a soul-seeking culture, and maybe you'll find yourself. All right, here's some good news. One place, that's all we're doing tonight. If you open your Old Testaments with me to 2 Kings chapter 5, you are home for the night. Everything we're going to do is in 2 Kings chapter 5. There are characters here that we can learn from and make application from. If you're not familiar yet, when you get there, you probably will be. You might be thinking, what does 2 Kings 5 have to do with evangelism in the name of Jesus? But I hope that you'll find these characters fascinating. If you're there and you're in verse 1, it probably rings a bell for you. This is the story of a foreign man named Naaman. Now, we already know some things about Naaman, and I trust tonight that what you'll see on this board, to this side, some of which will be familiar to you. You'll say, oh yeah, I remember that. We've studied Naaman before. That's a good point. But I think maybe a few things from this story might come as a surprise to some and be some new information. So let's kind of look at what we're doing here. There's a really pretty picture of a river that's not what the river looked like or anything. But the story starts with Naaman as a dying man. He is a lost and desperate person, and we all know this already. You look in verse 1. Naaman, captain of the army of the king of Aram, was a great man with his master, highly respected, because by him the Lord had given victory to them. The man was a valiant warrior, but the text says that he was a leper. Now, we know a little bit about that, probably not as much as we think that we do, but it was a terrible skin disease. It was contagious and awful. It was a lot like sin. That's why we use this story so much. It just sort of eats at you, and it's catchy to the people around you, and very often they would die a torrential and terrible and lonely death in its grips. Now, the good news is, and you already know this, if you move down to verse 14, he's cleansed. It's the beauty of this story. The story begins with a dying man of a disease called leprosy. And in verse 14, he goes down and he dipped himself 7 times in the Jordan according to the word of the man of God. And his flesh was restored like the flesh of a little child, and he was clean. Anybody ever heard this story before? We love this story. This is one of our big baptism stories. We're trying to show it. I think it's a great baptism story, because it shows that all throughout history, there are examples, even in the Old Testament, where God used the agency of water as something you interacted with in order to have cleansing. We saw it on a global level early in the book of Genesis when the entire earth got flooded with water. to cleanse it from its sin. We saw it on a national level when the Red Sea parted and the nation went through and the water washed away all of their adversaries. But now you get to see it in a personal, one at a time level, which kind of relates more to how it works in the church. So if you use this text for baptism, that is not particularly what we're going to do tonight, but it's great. You should keep it in your arsenal. It's powerful. But what I want to note are the characters involved. I'm not particularly here tonight to find someone who's not yet been baptized into Christ and help you come to that water, though clearly we want to do that. It's more about, hey, this is Sunday night, 5 o'clock. I mean, these are the gamers. You're the ones who are in this thing. You're in Christ, and you want to learn how to live for Christ. So what you're going to see down this left side is a cast of characters, because Naaman did not find healing on his own. It is rarely God's design that someone finds their way from misdirection to true direction all on their own. They need help. That help is your preacher. Yes, and also you. That help is you. The work that we do is the people, and the work that we do is done by the people. So let's take a look at this event and see if we can pull some things together. My first and favorite character in the story is the nameless little servant girl. Look with me in the text. Now the Arameans, verse 2, had gone out in bands and had taken captive a little girl from the land of Israel. And she waited on Naaman's wife. She said to her mistress, "I wish that my master were with the prophet who is in Samaria. Then he would cure him of his leprosy." Naaman went in and told his master, saying, "Thus and thus spoke this girl who is from the land of Israel." And this began his journey to go and find the truth. I want you to note some interesting things about this girl, but let me begin by asking. I'm looking around the room. Who are our little servant girls in the room? Are you a little servant girl? Little servant girls up here in the front? The church is in desperate need for more little servant girls. We don't know her name. Her name wasn't crucial to the story. I don't even know if she knows the prophet's name. She's not the Bible quoter. She can't take you through all the texts. She can't argue against all the false ideas. She's just a girl from a place that knew God who says, if you go to that place, you're going to find God there. She is an inviter. And what I think is really cool about her is it's not like she's living the high life, you know? It's not like everything's going great in her life, and she's like, oh, God's taking such good care of me. I think I'll send this guy to go be cleansed. She is a slave. She has been captured, perhaps taken from her family. Evangelism is such a funny thing. We're always looking for that perfect environment to invite somebody to church. We're looking for that perfect opportunity where everything in your day is going just right, and then maybe we'll talk to somebody about learning the gospel. That is not the way it has ever worked. Evangelism is something that you do because no matter what you're going through, no matter what you're dealing with, you may be a slave. Somebody in front of you needs help, and you know where they can find it. So I'm going to tell you that what we largely need among God's people is for everyone to ask yourself, am I this little servant girl? I don't have to know everything, be able to explain everything, but can I invite people to church? Can I tell people where they can learn the truth? Can I point them in the right direction? Can I tell them about our preachers and some of the material that we've prepared? You know the people who are hurting. They're in your life. Be the little servant girl. So she's my favorite because no matter what happens after this, the men who are in the know, the great explanations, the dipping in the river, none of it happens unless some little girl points a man in the right direction. You think you can do that? You think you just point somebody in the right direction? I think every child of God ought to be able to do that. Now, there are a couple of characters that are actually not great in this story, which I think is fascinating. They're not even going to get listed. And they are the kings. The king of Aram, you know, he tells him to go and take the gifts. And when Naaman gets to Israel, he talks to the king of Israel, who doesn't know anything that's going on. Like, king of Israel is supposed to be the man. He's supposed to know everything. He doesn't know anything. In fact, he thinks it's some, like, ploy that's going to cause trouble. But if you'll pick up with me in verse 8, I want to tell you about these messengers, or at least this one messenger. So it happened when Elisha, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had torn his clothes, that he sent word to the king saying, "Why have you torn your clothes? Now let him come to me, and he shall know that there is a prophet in Israel." So Naaman came with his horses and his chariots, and he stood at the doorway of the house of Elisha. Elisha sent a messenger. I think this is interesting. Elisha, the prophet of God, didn't even walk outside. Elisha sent a messenger to him saying, look, it's really easy. You go and you wash in the Jordan 7 times and your flesh will be restored to you and you will be clean. Now, the servant girl is important. She creates this entire bit of momentum. But at some point, somebody had to look at Naaman and say, this is what you need to do. This is what you need to do to be saved. This is how you can be made free from your sins. I've been freed from my sins. You can be freed from yours. Elisha in this story kind of represents like the word itself, you know, like the actual prophets, which you're not and I'm not. But it wasn't the prophet himself that spoke to Naaman. It was a messenger, a believer who knew the truth and was willing to share it. Will you ask yourself a question? Do I know the truth? I'm not talking about full genealogical explanations. I'm asking you, do you know the truth of how to be freed from your sins? Do you know the truth of the gospel? You say, yes, I know the truth. What we need in the church are more truth tellers. People who just carry the message. You're not responsible for the results, but you are responsible for the information. Let me tell you a little bit about what we're working on at home. I've been in Lindale 7 years. We've been working on this the whole time. But when I got there 7 years ago, I have a 4-lesson book called The Gospel Message, which we use to help convert people. It's the truth that you tell people, and they fill in some blanks. And so when we first got there, I didn't say, hey, everybody, send all your prospects to me, and I'm the preacher, and I wear ties, and I'll tell them the truth. The first thing we did the first quarter is we had an entire auditorium class for 3 straight months, and I made hundreds of copies of that book, and we gave it to every person, and every member of our church had a fully filled out gospel message book. And my message was, now you're ready. Like, hand them a book and go study with them. And only a couple of people did it. But 3 years later, we did it all again. And this year, we did it all again. And guess what started to change at our church? Can I tell you that of the last 20 conversions through baptism, I have been the primary teacher. There's only one preacher in Lindale. I've been the primary teacher of 2 of them. That's 18 people who found Christ because members of our church said, I think I can tell the truth. I think I know how to do this. And I would say to preachers and elders, we need to be equipping them to do that. Are you guys ready to get out of here? Can I add an extra little story? Boy, that silence was deafening. Okay. A handful of years ago, I got asked to address a group of men. There were 50 men. There were elders, deacons, preachers, you know, the good guys in a room on evangelism. We're going to talk about evangelism all day. And I had a question, but I asked a question before the question to set up the question. I said, before I get to the real question, if you had a Bible study fall in your lap today, like somebody just walked up and said, hey, I need help, what have you prepared to present to them? It was early in the morning, but we just sat there for a little while. And finally, one guy raised his hand and he said, I think I would just start in Luke. A preacher said, I think I would just start in Luke. I'm like, you're just going to read, like, that's the longest chapter in the New Testament. Is that your plan? We'll just read 80 verses and then it's all downhill from there? Like, what's your plan? Somebody said, well, I would just kind of take them where they are. Look, I get that, but that's, you still got to get to the truth. I said, guys, I haven't even asked you my real question yet. My real question is, if one of the sheep where you pastor, any one of us, or if one of the members of the church where you were preaching had somebody that got sent their direction say, what do I do? How have you equipped them to go and tell the truth? What do you think happened? You're doing it. That's exactly what happened. They just stared at me like that. And I realized we have a fundamental problem. By not enabling every believer to challenge themselves to believe that you have been gifted to share the truth. We need messengers. So that's the second thing that's going on here. So they give him the message, and by the way, he just doesn't like it. I don't think it was shared wrong. I just don't think he was ready for it. So when we pick up in verse 11, the text says, Naaman was furious and went away and said, behold, I thought, which by the way, biblically is like always bad. Behold, I thought, he will surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God and wave his hand over the place and cure the leper. And then he lists these other rivers. Are not these better than all the waters of Israel? Could I not go wash in them and be clean? So he turned and he stormed off in a rage. And then comes a very important group of people. These servants. Now I want you to notice what these servants didn't do. Their role was not to send Naaman in the right direction. The girl did that. Their role was not to find out what the truth was and lay it out for him. The messenger did that. Their role was to know the man on a personal level and help walk him through what he's struggling with. In verse 13, his servants, who by the way also probably were slaves, you know, they're not in the best situation. His servants came near and spoke to him and said, "My father, had the prophet told you to do some great thing, would you not have done it? How much more then when he says to you, wash and be clean?" So he went down and dipped himself seven times and he became clean and it all worked out. After all of this work, it still wasn't going to work out. The guy was going to die. Except there were some servants, some people in his life who knew him. Stick with me. Who got to know him. Who cared about him. Who called him father. Who could say, "Look, I know you don't like the information you've just gotten. But let's sit down and let's talk through it together." And because of that, he was able to reason. I wonder who we've got in our room who's good at that. Maybe you're not the one doing the Bible studies, but you're the person at church who gets to know that visitor. You're the person at church who opens up your home. You're hospitable. You build a relationship. So as soon as they're ready to storm out the door and say, "I don't like that sermon or what it meant, I'm out of here," you can say, "Hang on a minute. Let's go get some coffee. Let me just talk to you about this." And they're going to go, "I'm so frustrated." And then you can say, "Look, you know, when you think about it, it kind of makes a lot of sense." And they're going to go, "Yeah, it does make a lot of sense." Who in the room is good at that? I think there's some people in this room been gifted with that. And the people are already here and visiting and interacting. And so it's this great, great story. And I want to add one more thing that I think is really interesting, because usually we stop the story after verse 14. You know, be baptized, stand and sing. But there's a lot more. Look in verses 15 through 19. "When he returned to the man of God with all of his company and came and stood before him, he said, 'Behold now, I know that there is no God in all the earth but in Israel. So please, take a present from your servant now.' But he said, 'As the Lord lives before whom I stand,'" Elisha says, "'I will take nothing.' And he urged him to take it, but he refused. Naaman said, 'If not, please let your servant at least be given 2 mules load of earth. For your servant will no longer offer burnt offerings, nor will he sacrifice to other gods, but to the Lord.'" Two more verses. "In this matter, may the Lord pardon me," Naaman says, "your servant, when my master goes into the house of Rimmon to worship there, and he leans on my hand, and I bow myself in this house, and when I bow myself in this house, may the Lord pardon your servant in this matter." Now, before I read verse 19, do you get what he's saying? He's saying, "Okay, I now believe in the one true God. I've obeyed the one true God. I want to live for the one true God, but I got a kind of messed up life. And part of what's going to happen is I'm going to head back to where I have to go, and they're going to make me go in these idols' temples, and I don't want to worship those idols. In fact, if I could take some holy ground," this is kind of cool, actually, it's a neat idea. "If I could take some holy ground with me, if you won't take my gifts, give me dirt, and I'll go make like a dirt pad behind my house. And then I can go worship and hold." Like he's trying to wrestle with the fact that he's got a kind of messed up life and a lot of things to work through. And in verse 19, Elisha, I love this. Elisha said to him, "Go in peace." So he departed from him some distance. What does that mean, do you think? You got a couple of good teachers here. I'm going to leave that for them for next week. But, I mean, they probably are not going to teach on next week. But, like, what does he mean, go in peace? What he's saying is, look, I know you have a lot to work out. I know it's not clear-cut and easy. And by the way, evangelism is messy. Did you hear me say that this morning? Teaching people a new way of living and thinking and working and processing their home life. They come out of the water, they still have the same home life. They come up out of the water, they still have the same challenges in their lives. What we need is someone to go to them after they become Christians and say, "God is going to help you with this. Listen to me. It's going to be okay. He's going to help you. He's going to bring peace in your life. We're going to work through this together. Don't panic. I know that it's difficult." How many of you are sitting there thinking, you know, seems like in the history of the church, we don't baptize a lot of people, but sometimes after we baptize them, they're just kind of on their own and then we lose them. Or maybe you're going, why is it after we baptize people, we tend to lose them? It's because sometimes we're like, okay, go do it. You got it. Well, it's complicated, isn't it? And so this text says Elisha steps in to be an assurer of peace. So I just want you to look at this. I want you to take a look at this list and go like, who are you? Or in your case, what's my part in this? Can you imagine? Can you imagine a church? There's like 300, 400 people here this morning. Can you imagine a church where 100 of us are servant girls and 100 of us are like teaching and 100 of us are just building those connections? I'm talking about people who are not yet Christians. I'm talking about people who are desperate. And 100 of us are doing the follow-up stuff. Like, what happens to a church like that? Explosion in the right kind of growth. Now, you might say, and I'm going to go back through this for just a moment. You might say, well, it sounds really good, but the truth is, you know, it's a lot harder than that out there because not everybody wants to hear the truth. And not everybody will go when you point them in the right direction. Totally, totally true. So let me give you three things here in that left box that were true of Naaman that you ought to be looking for. Number one, he was desperate. We mentioned this morning. He was hurting. He was sick. He knew he was in trouble. It is very hard to save someone who believes they're already saved. Do you know that to be true? Someone who does not believe that they're sick, who doesn't need anything. In that case, you just be really nice to them, okay? But if you know anybody in your life that is unsure if they are saved, that is feeling the desperation of thinking, I'm going to die in my sins, do not walk past those people. Don't do that. You say, well, actually, I already know somebody. I work with somebody. It's time. It's time. Because one of the keys was desperation. And also, I tell you what else I liked about this guy. Not only that he was going, somebody help me, but also that when he heard what to do, he got really mad about it. You say, that's not good. It's not good that he got mad about it. We want somebody who just like colors in the boxes. Verse 11 says, he was furious and he walked away. You know what I love? I love honest people. I love people who tell you, I like that, I don't like that. I understand this. I don't understand that. You bring to me someone who is furious and confused and honest about it, and we can do amazing things. You bring me a liar, what are we going to do? You bring me someone who says, it's fine, or I'll do, okay, fine, I'll go in the river. You bring me someone who doesn't get it, who's frustrated, and who hides it, and we can do nothing. And the reason I tell you that is because it's in the story, but also you might be like, you know, there is somebody in my life I've tried to teach, but every time I try to teach them, they get all mad and they start kind of spouting things. Look, if they're being honest with you about how they feel, that is a positive, not a negative. It's kind of like Facebook. You know, when Facebook came out about 10, whatever years, I don't know how long ago it was. People were like, this is the worst thing in the world. Look at the stuff that they're posting. People are just pouring their junk out. You know what? That's who they were. At least now you know it. Now you know, like, okay, that's who that person, okay, I get it. That's who you are. And now if you're honest about who you are, then I think we can probably make progress. So you have two things, and then what I really love about it is he's just, I think a better word probably would be gratitude. One of the things that starts happening in a church that is mission-oriented to evangelism and is really reaching and working and bringing people in is you'll find a lot of Naamans in terms of gratitude and charity and sharing. Naaman is so thankful that he's found what was missing that he wants to give them gifts. He's pleading to serve and to do and to get involved. And that just feeds this great optimism about the great God of heaven and his worthiness. Naaman was a man who was desperate. He was honest. But once he gets the truth, he's going to live a thankful and grateful life. I think about some of the conversions recently. There were a couple of young ladies who, one was just kind of walking in a park and the other one was working at Sonic. And some of the ladies from church, two different ladies, I'm just telling you two stories simultaneously because they're similar, invited them. And then, but they had like nothing. But everybody at church was like, no, we're going to take care of you. And they brought them in and both of them wrestled with the scripture a little bit and they both kind of obeyed. And now they're just these beaming lights in our fellowship that are so grateful and thankful. And sometimes I think our old, I don't mean old people when I say old timers. I just mean long timers. Those of us who've been in the church a long time. We look at them all beaming around and smiling. And they don't do this. But they're singing and they're doing all this stuff. And we're just kind of like, you know, they kind of need to calm down. You need to get fired up. You need some of that old gratitude that comes from people who are on fire. You know, it's interesting. We taught one of the young ladies the gospel message, and she came to me the next week, and she said, Chris, you got any more of those gospel message books? And I said, yeah, I got a few on the wall over here. We keep them in the foyer, and I can talk to the elders later this week if they'd like about that. But she said, I'm going to need 20 of them. I said, you've been a Christian for like 4 days. What are you going to do? She said, I'm going to a family reunion this weekend, and I'm giving it to everybody. Man, she'd been a Christian 4 days. 4 days. and she is ready to go out and like do all of it. That's what we need them for. But that's also what you need to be searching for. So love this side of the story. To me, it helps you identify what your role might be. And I hope it gets you excited about the prospects. And I know you've already seen some of that here. This church is doing well. None of this is about you guys aren't doing well and I'm here to fix it. That's not any of this. This is just about excel still more. This is about going from where we are to whatever God has planned next for us. And this is what it looks like. Okay, here's something interesting, though. Are you still there in the text? You know, it keeps going, actually. There are about seven more verses, and this is very rarely preached, but did you know that the leprosy, how many of you knew, before you look ahead, how many of you knew that Naaman was a leper when the story began? Everybody. How many of you knew that the leprosy got cast away from Naaman? Everybody. Okay, how many of you knew that the leprosy came back at the end of the story? Who knew that? You know that? Did you know that that leprosy came back? Let me show you something, except I have to introduce a different character to you. We haven't seen him yet, but his name is Gehazi. Gehazi's a good guy. Gehazi's on the inside. Gehazi's a Christian. He's a member of the church, sort of figuratively, connectively speaking. He is a guy who has a relationship with Elisha. He has seen Elisha raise people from the dead. He is an advocate of the truth. And when this story starts, Gehazi, the inside man, is doing great. Now skip to the last verse. Therefore, the leprosy of Naaman shall cling to you and to your descendants forever. So he went out from his presence a leper as white as snow. Do you know that? That the lost guy has this great attitude. I mean, he struggled a little bit, but he hung in there. And he becomes the saved guy. And the saved guy becomes the lost guy. This sounds very much like our Pharisee stories. Very much like our Pharisee stories. Jesus is out converting the Matthews and the fishermen and the prostitutes, and he's bringing them in. And the Pharisees, who are already on the inside, end up the blind ones at the end. They get the very disease, John 9. They get the very disease that Jesus cast out of one, except it was spiritually and eternal. So what in the world's going on here, Gehazi? Well, let's just read it together. Verses 20 through 27. Here's what happens. You know, by the way, that Naaman is begging Elisha to give him goods, and Elisha says, no, this is about you, not about me, it's about God. But Gehazi, verse 20, the servant of Elisha, the man of God, thought, here we go again, behold, my master has spared this Naaman, the Aramean, by not receiving from his hands what he brought. As the Lord lives, I will run after him and take something from him. So Gehazi pursues Naaman. When Naaman saw one running after him, he comes down from the chariot to meet him, and he says, is everything okay? Is all well? He said, all is well. My master has sent me, saying, behold, just now two young men of the sons of the prophets have come to me from the hill country of Ephraim. Please give them a talent of silver and two changes of clothes. Naaman said, be pleased to take two talents. Remember, Naaman is like awesome. Take two, I don't care, take whatever you want. And he urged him, and he bound two talents of silver in two bags with two changes of clothes, and he gave the two to his servant, and they carried them before him. When he came to the hill, he took them from their hand, and here's what Gehazi does. He deposits them in his house, and he sent the men away, and they departed. But he went in and stood before his master, and Elisha said to him, where you been, Gehazi? And he said, nowhere. Haven't been anywhere. Then he said to him, did not my heart go with you when the man turned from his chariot to meet you? Is it a time? What a great question. Love this question. Is it a time to receive money? Is it a time to receive money and to receive clothes and olive groves and vineyards and sheep and oxen and male and female slaves? Is that what time it is for us to take? Therefore, the leprosy of Naaman shall cling to you and to your descendants forever. So he went out, and it wasn't just him, it was his children, it was his descendants forever. He was alive a little while later, so he didn't die instantly, but he had this terrible disease. Now, here's what I want you to see. Gehazi is supposed to be the guy who knows better. Like, he's the faithful guy. Naaman is supposed to be the Aramean, you know, the fringe guy that's lucky if he's allowed to be healed. But did you notice that, like, Gehazi is the exact opposite of Naaman? Naaman is desperate. Naaman is pleading for help. He's willing to listen to a little girl and to make a long journey. And yet Gehazi is feeling, what, entitled. Gehazi's like, you know, this doesn't add up because I'm Gehazi. I'm an Israelite. I'm worthy of things. I've earned this. And this Naaman, he's below me. This ain't right. It is not right that he doesn't have to give gifts to the one who taught him. And so he is feeling that sense of pride and entitlement and self-exaltation that we talked about this morning. And it took him over so desperately that he was willing to lie in order to get. This is getting dark and fast. It's getting dark. It starts with just a little bit of this. You say, well, okay, whatever, you know. It starts with this. But once you're here and they're here, there's really no limit you're going to go to make that pay off. And so he deceives and he lies to Naaman about who needed it. And then he has to go back. And he's feeling anxious at this point. He has to go back and lie to Elisha to try to cover for it because he is burdened with great greed. He is Judas. He is this one who is seeking to have for himself. He believes he deserves it. He is Judas. He believes, I walk with Jesus. I deserve to get things. We are better than the Samaritans. We are better than the tax collectors. And so what did Judas do? He used to pilfer from the money box. Because that's the way it should go. He deserves it. And when challenged about it, he lied about it. This is the modern story, the old story of what came about in Judas, and they both died. Here's what I need you to see. We've got work to do, folks. You've got work to do. The work is the people. There are Naaman all around you. There are roles to play. There are people who are desperate, honest, and charitable. We cannot have members of the church being at the same time entitled. I earned my spot. I've gone through the work. This is still about me at this church. I don't know who I'm talking to. I just got here. I don't know who I'm talking to. Can't bring all these people in here, can't go through all that, can't make it about them. I have paid my dues. Be careful about feeling entitled in Christ. Because what will follow is you will hide that emotion because you know it's not right. You'll hide it. And you may deceive. And greed and pharisaical self-exaltation and selfishness is going to eat you up from the inside. And in the end, the very sinfulness and disease and death that you weren't too sure about saving someone else from is going to claim you. You think that's going to happen in the judgment? I just have this sense. I'm not a judge of any ilk. I'm not the judge. But I have this strong suspicion that there are going to be a lot of insiders in the last day who are ready to go. But they made it about them during this life and not about the mission. Not about the mission, unless the mission was self. And all the church worship in the world is not going to counter for not being like Jesus. Let me give you a couple of thoughts here. What I would say for the Gehazis, in fact, let me just land this plane with three things. Okay, I'm going to land it in this way. Number one, there are three people this lesson is for tonight. There's three people, let's walk it out. This is the invitation. Number one, it is clearly, we need to say this, it's clearly for people who are in Naaman's position. You've come to visit our assembly tonight, you've been listening, you say, you know what, I have heard the truth, and there have been kind people in my life who have taught me, and I've been mad about it, at least I've been honest about being mad about it, but you know what, I just want to obey the gospel and believe in the Lord. The water is ready, it's warm. I don't know that it's warm. I try to always tell the truth. I have no idea the temperature of that water. But I'll tell you this, the colder it is, the longer you will remember it. Fact. The river was dirty. He didn't care. In fact, he did care, and then he learned not to care, didn't he? When he learned not to care about the condition of the river, that's when he was in the right place. So there you go. So number one, if you're someone who's not in Christ, I guarantee you there are people here who want to help you. You need to do that. Number two, and largely, I believe I'm looking at a group of people who can fill these four roles. You can point in the right direction. You can share the gospel. You can help them reason through the challenges. And you can help them understand that in Jesus Christ, it'll be okay while you're working through all the stuff that follows. You can do that. Please do that. Find your role and your way. And if you're like, you know, I think I do know, but I don't know that I know anybody who's like desperate. I don't know that I know anybody who's questioning their life or concerned about their future. Here's what I want you to do. Go home tonight and pray about that. Lord, would you please, I am ready. Would you please bring someone into my path who is questioning, who is hurting, who is sad, who is lonely, who is desperate, and who doesn't have anyone to help. Now, you're going to come to me on Tuesday, and you're going to go, Chris, you're not going to believe this. I prayed about it Sunday night, and they showed up Monday morning. But you know what? They probably were already there. Zacchaeus has been in the tree a while. The Lord's just waiting on you and me to see them. God's like, I got them there. I want you to do that. So my second invitation is really towards engagement. Let's find what we can do and let's do it. This week, it may be as simple as inviting somebody to come and be at the meeting. But then we need to talk about one final thing. Maybe there's someone in this room who has been in the Lord a long time. And you've heard all this stuff today by this Texas preacher who waves his hands around too much. And you're like, okay, get it, you know, evangelism and humility and sharing. I don't think I'm going to do it. We can get a few other people to do it, but, you know, I put in my time. I've been a Christian a long time, and you know, I'm just kind of out of that game now. You know, you can go read about Caleb. Caleb's like, we ain't never out of the game. If I've got strength in my body, I'm going to do the work of the Lord. But maybe that's not where your head's at. And what I'm telling you is you need to be careful that you haven't fallen trapped to Gehazi's entitlement. You've earned your place in your pew, in your spot. And that self-focus, and that you're not deceiving yourself, and that it's actually not about you. Because so far as it's about you getting, the church cannot be what Jesus died to make it. Can't be that. So far as it's about that. So my invitation to you is twofold. I'm going to put them both up here. Number one, it's time for a reset. It's time for you to do a full systems reset. You say, I don't know how to do a reset. I don't know how to get into this sort of me-focused stuff. We're going to talk about that tomorrow night. But one of the best things you can do, you want a life tip? Go spend some time with a new convert. It'll fix you just like that. Go spend some time with someone who's hungry and inquisitive and challenging themselves all the time and who falls down and gets back up and yearns to learn. Like, go recapture it. The truth is, they don't need to become more like me. I need to become more like them. You guys know the church invitation rule? It's not a law. It's just a general rule. Somebody's been a Christian this long. They invite this many people to church. Somebody's been a Christian this long. Sometimes they invite this many people to church. I don't know why that is, but we need a reset. And it's time to fix it. And then the other thing I would say, look over on the right. How many people helped Gehazi get to that place? You see it? How many people helped Naaman be saved? Lots of people. Full cast of characters involved. How many people helped Gehazi become a self-centered, deceptive, dying man? How many people are on the right? None. He just did it on his own. And so the last thing that I would say to those in the church who are not engaged, who don't know how to be engaged, and who are frustrated that the preacher keeps talking about it. Get some help. Get help. You say, well, it's the people in the world who need the help. They do. But maybe it's also you. Maybe it's the believer that needs to get the help. Maybe it's the long timer that needs to get that. I'm not talking about age. I'm talking about repetition. Get with somebody who can help rekindle your fire, who can help you identify your skills, who can be an accountability partner in the strength of partnership, and get the help that you need. If Naaman needed help, so do you. And the result can be transformation. Remember, we want to transfer all of the Naamans. We want to convert them from out to in. But sometimes those of us who are here need to be converted from high to low. And you're going to need some help with that. If we can help you, the invitation is for you also, as together we stand and sing.
Shepherds with wonder receive it, sinners all to believe it. Thank you, Chris, for that excellent lesson tonight, and what a challenge to all of us. And once again, if you were not able to be here this morning, go back and watch the two lessons from this morning. It'll really help you build upon this. And the thing I took away from tonight reminded me of Isaiah chapter 6 and verse 8. Lord, here I am, send me. After hearing this lesson tonight, if you're not willing, if you're not, like he said, to be fired up to go tell the gospel, to invite somebody to be here for the rest of this week, then you may be the one on the other side that needs help. So as you go out of here tonight, we've got five more lessons. We'll be having a meeting here at 7 o'clock Monday through Friday this week. So please make plans to be here for that and bring anybody that you can with you. So thank you for that lesson, Chris. We've got just a few more announcements for you tonight and to bring you up to date on some things. As was announced this morning, we have an update on Ezra. No updates at this time on Ezra. He was battling some issues this week, so please keep Ezra in your thoughts and prayers, as well as Ed Zaleski, who had the bicycle accident, and he's recovering at this time. Tonight will be after services coming up here in just about an hour, I guess, after everybody gets through here. We'll be meeting out at the Browning, the college-age kids and young adults will be meeting out at the Browning Community Center. If you don't know where that's at, you can get with one of us or get with Ryan and Emily Downey. They'll give you the directions to there. That's for the college-age young adults to get together and to meet tonight. So make plans for that if you are here with us tonight to meet there with them. Also, we had Ricky and Diane Motes. This is some Christians in Smiths Grove. Their oldest son was killed in a car accident this week, so please keep that family in your prayers also. And I think that's all the announcements that we have. Group 2 will be meeting right after services down in the hallway B, B7. If you're in Group 2, please plan on being in that and doing your part to help out. And I believe that is it at this time. Any other announcements? We're good to go, then we'll be standing for one last song and a closing prayer.
If you would, turn your songbooks to number 104. We'll sing the first verse of 104, and then we'll be led in the closing prayer. 104. When my way groweth drear, precious Lord,